As a listener, Jay, this is one of my favorite segments that you and Ryan do every single week.
And that is because of the man known as Richard Kress. Hello, Richard.
Hey, how are you guys?
Worlds
I've been
colliding.
Listening. The show sounds great. I know you're just phoning it in, but it sounds great.
Thank you for that, Richard.
Well. And also, so this isn't what we're talking about booze-wise today, but you mentioned peanut butter. You both are big fans. My wife came home the other day with a peanut butter rye. A rye whiskey.
Really?
Flavor.
What?
Yeah. I've not had the nerve to open it yet. Perhaps I'll report on that next week. I'll let you know how
you
it goes.
You know what? All right. I don't. Yeah. I mean, sometimes your best flavor, your favorite flavor in a drink isn't necessarily the best thing. If any of you, there's a guy on the internet. His name's Brittle Star. He's the internet's father.
Yeah.
Makes funny
he's
videos.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah, he's Richard's pal. He has, what is it, a gin that's a butter
No,
tart?
It's a vodka. He butter has a maple syrup vodka. And I did a video a while ago where I made a few drinks with it, and it's actually really good.
Okay,
very Canadian.
And they can't stop selling out. They make 700 or 800 bottles at a time, and then they're gone like just immediately. So yeah, I'm so happy for Brittle Star. His name is Stuart. I'm so happy for him because the booze thing is working out.
So let's do our regularly scheduled drink for today, which is I think a fan favorite, especially in the summertime. I also think it's one of those drinks that you start when you're starting off earlier in your drinking career that you might drink a few of.
Absolutely. At Mr. Green Jeans, when I worked there, this was one of those drinks that, along with a tequila sunrise or a zombie, if people ordered it, you automatically asked for ID. And it's called a Long Island iced tea. I'm sure that there's a lot of people out there that have had them.
And hold on, just why sort of, is that? Because kids will come in and
kids, okay. Because they know it's extra boozy, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's made with kinds of booze, vodka, rum, tequila, gin, triple sec, and it'll kind of, you know, as I used to say, get you where you're going. So you always automatically ID anyone that orders one of them if they look dodgy. If you want to sort of fully grasp what the dangers of this are, I made a little montage. Mike, can we play the clip?
Is that a Long Island iced tea?
Oh, this? I think it is. You're a pretty girl.
I usually go chamomile tea, but I don't think that's going to cut it.
You could have a Long Island iced tea.
Would that calm my nerves?
It's calmed the pants off me a couple times.
Long Island iced tea makes you do things that you normally wouldn't do, like lifting your skirt in public or calling someone you normally wouldn't call at really weird times.
I'm not looking forward to meeting Long Island iced tea.
I'd definitely walk the other way.
My Long Island iced tea. Yeah.
Wow.
So there's even songs written about this drink. And so a lot of people are wondering where it came from. And there's a bunch of myths around this. Some people think that it was invented by housewives, old-fashioned term, but that's what it said on the internet, who used just a little bit of each kind of alcohol in their cabinets so that nobody would notice that they're taking just a little, you know, a quarter ounce here, half an ounce here. Some people think that it was invented during Prohibition when bartenders would commonly disguise alcoholic drinks to look like non-alcoholic drinks because, as the name kind of suggests, it looks like iced tea. Apparently, none of those are true. There are two stories, at least, that seem to make some sense. One, in the 1920s, there was a drink called the Old Man Bishop, and it was made at a local community bar in Long Island in Kingsport, Tennessee, by a guy called Old Man Bishop, widely enough. And he just threw a drink together using literally the scraps that he had in the bar, rum, vodka, whiskey, gin, tequila, and maple syrup, shook it up, and it kind of tasted palatable enough with the maple syrup that it became kind of popular, then people forgot about it. Then it was in the 1960s, featured in a Betty Crocker New Picture Cookbook in 1961, kind of a riff on the Old Man Bishop recipe, but the refined version of it came from a guy called Robert Rosebud Butt in 1961. 1972. Mm-hmm. And he entered a contest where they said, you have to use triple sec to make a cocktail, and you can use anything else. As long as it's got triple sec in it, that's all we really care about. And he bottles started flying. He banged vodka, rum, tequila, gin, and triple sec together with some simple syrup, bit of lemon juice, and then a little splash of Coca-Cola on the top, and the Long Island iced tea was born.
Wow.
Beauty.
What a great historical.
It is so dangerous, too, man, because it goes down so easy on a summer's day.
You have to be careful. Well, listen to the clip.
Yeah.
There were no happy stories there.
Yeah. Dangerous game, the Long Island iced tea. Dangerous game.
We've got about 3 minutes left. I want to make sure we get this in because I think this is really timely as well. We'll get into the new Dwayne Johnson movie, some really heavy hitters in this flick that's new on Netflix. But Dwayne recently was asked about the gun death on the movie Rust and the tragedy that happened there. And he's now talking about only using ever plastic guns on his sets.
Any movie that we have moving forward with Seven Bucks Production, any movie, any television show, or anything we do or produce, we won't use real guns at all. We're going to switch over to rubber guns, and we're going to take care of it in post. We're not going to worry about the dollars. We won't worry about what it costs, because really, with something like this, and it just sucks that it had to happen like this for us on our end. Again, I can't speak for anybody else, but for us to wake up when that happened, within 2 hours, I had the entire team on the phone, and we're like, okay, what can we do now? Like, let's really look at this, and how can we move forward in a better way?
So now, I guess, Richard, the pressure's pretty much on everybody else to follow suit.
Well, he is pretty much the biggest movie star in the world, literally and figuratively, right now. Mm. And he also produces pretty much everything that he's in. So this is a huge step forward. So, a lot of people have been talking about it. He's the first one to say absolutely no more. And what he says in that clip, he says, we'll fix it in post. What it means is that they will use toy guns, rubber guns, plastic guns, whatever it is. And then they will add the gun flare at the barrel, the bullet coming out of the barrel later on. They'll do it with computer generated images. Mm. And a number of people have talked about this, and it has happened in movies before. It's not completely new technology. In films, you have a number of different kinds of guns that are used. For long shots, generally speaking, they use plastic or rubber guns where you can't really see them that well. For some closer scenes, they will use real guns, but they will have their barrels filled with molten lead, so it's impossible for anything to come out of them. In close-ups, though, they often use modified real guns that only shoot paper squibs or blanks, and that gives you, in a close-up, that look of authenticity when the gun kicks back a little bit and you see something come out of the barrel. What Dwayne Johnson here is saying, and I've seen Red Notice, I'll tell you all about it next week when it actually moves to Netflix. It's in theaters this week, goes to Netflix next week. There's a lot of gunplay in that movie, and on a set like that, when there's hundreds of rounds being expelled, you have to be extra careful because the danger is so high. And what he's saying is, well, we're going to eliminate the danger. And I think he's probably on the right side of history on this one.
And for those of you just joining us, welcome back.
Welcome.
It is indeed the weekend. For those of you that were with us previous to the 2 o'clock hour ending, you'll know that we're very happy to have returning with us for part two of his appearance this week, Richard Krause. We got the booze part out of the way, Richard.
We did.
We did not.
There's an addendum to that, though.
We did not get to the reviews.
Well, during the break, my wife emailed me. She can hear me. She's listening. And she said the whiskey that we talked about is called Screwball Whiskey, and it tastes like a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup, apparently.
All right.
All right.
Because somebody else sent us something. Is this...
This is it. The Screwball. Our producer, Mike Trutler, sent this to us. From Liquorama. $25.99. The Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey.
It's a $49.
For Halloween.
Okay.
It is available at the LCBO, just FYI.
Thank you very much.
All right.
So, Richard, as we mentioned, we did not get to the reviews portion. And there's some really interesting movies this week, including we just talked about The Rock. He's part of an all-star team for the movie that this debuted last night at midnight.
Well, it's playing in theaters now. I was going to hang on to that one until next week. Okay. I can tell you, but it's a heist movie. Ryan Reynolds is in it. Gal Gadot is in it. And The Rock is in it. And let's be glad that the three of them have a lot of charisma. Because if not, okay, this would just be like a fuzzy screen that you were watching.
With just mere mortals in the title roles, this would have been a turkey.
So what about this Eternals with, it's a Marvel movie without any Marvel people we've ever heard of before?
Well, if you're a comic book fan, and I'm sure Donnie probably knows who the Eternals are, they've been They've been in comic books since about 1976, and they are 10 superheroes who are 7,000 years old. So 7,000 years ago, they were sent to Earth, created by the Celestials to come and battle someone called the Deviants. These are evil creatures that were a threat to mankind. So they come down, they vanquish these Deviants, and then the Celestials say, you know what, you can't get involved in any man-made warfare. You're not to interfere with that, because if you do, you can just go in and fix everything. Man will never figure out how to look after themselves, mankind. So for 7,000 years, they just live among the people until the Deviants show up again in present day and they have to get back together. But they've had 7,000 years to think about things. And they're wondering if their mandate, if their purpose on Earth is just or not. And there's a lot of talk about that in the movie. In fact, there's a lot of talk about a lot of stuff in the movie. It's 2 hours and 37 minutes long. If you stay straight through to the end, which most people are, because there are two post-credit scenes in this and you want to see them both. And there's a lot of characters. You don't know any of them, so you have to learn about their superpowers and their relationships and all that stuff. So this movie for me felt like simultaneously like too much and too little, because I found myself not really caring about the story particularly.
All right, I have to correct the record. Donnie's upset that I said that he didn't know about them. I misread something. Well, I read something accurately, but I read something into it, but he does know about them, so my apologies to Donnie. This movie, I've already seen the next movie, Jay.
You have. You watched it last night. Yeah. Now, on the surface, you know, you talked about lesser mortals not being able to make this role work. I also think if it wasn't Tom Hanks in this movie, it wouldn't necessarily work.
Everyone that I have talked to about the movie Finch has said exactly the same thing. And I felt that going in because, you know, the synopsis to me just felt like something I'd kind of seen before, or it felt like something that I was going to be terribly interested in. It's a dystopian world. Something terrible has happened. There's been a solar flare and most of humanity is gone. Tom Hanks survived because he worked in a bunker and presumably he was in there when all the terrible stuff happened. But he has radiation poisoning. His only companion is a dog. And as he is slowly dying, he builds a robot because he wants a caretaker for the dog once he's gone. Now, that sounds maudlin. That sounds like something you couldn't pay me to watch, except that somebody did pay me to watch it. And so here I am to tell you about it. And I liked it. I liked it quite a lot. And I liked it because it's Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks made us care about a volleyball in the movie Castaway.
Yep.
And he makes us care about a big computer-generated robot in Finch. I thought the father and son stuff worked well. It's way funnier than you think it's going to be. It's got kind of a lighter touch considering its subject matter. Finch, it's on Amazon Prime right now, and I quite liked it. It's kind of like a cross between Castaway and Short Circuit.
I don't think, is it on Apple? I think it's on Apple, isn't it?
I'm sorry, it is on Apple TV Plus.
Yeah, right. I saw it last night. I stayed up way too late, guys. So I really loved it, but I'm not sure how you can pay me to go see a movie about Princess Diana.
Oh, come on.
Sorry.
Oh, I will see this movie for sure.
All right. I've just changed my mind. I'm very easily going with Jay and his wife. We're going to go see this later
on
today.
Peanut butter whiskey, and then we're off to the movies.
Well, the peanut butter whiskey might not be a bad idea because this is kind of a psychological horror.
Really?
It's really interesting. So it's not exactly a biography of Lady Diana. It is one weekend in 1991. They're at Sandringham House where the royal family has their Christmas celebrations. Lady Diana arrives late. Things are underway when she gets there. But over the course of this weekend, her marriage is falling apart. The paparazzi won't leave her alone. The gap between her private life, what is actually happening in her life, and what the public perceives her life to be is growing wider and deeper with every day that passes. And she is kind of falling apart. She is at her most vulnerable here. Kristen Stewart plays her. We know her best from playing Bella Swan in the Twilight movies, and she does a great job here, but this is not an imitation. This is a really kind of personification of her psychological state. It's an interesting movie, again, like Finch, funnier than you think it's going to be, given the description that I just gave you. But it's also kind of, for my money anyway, kind of a gothic horror film. Wow. About what happens when you are, you know, set loose in a world that you don't understand and that people don't necessarily want you to understand. They just want you to bow down and obey.
I just laughed there because what if they did release it last weekend, a gothic horror story? People would have lost their mind.
It's interesting too right now, Richard, because Kristen Stewart doing the rounds, and she's engaged, which is great timing for the opening of a movie, so congratulations to her. But she's also said, you know, of the 20-some movies I've made, I think only 4 or 5 of them were really good, but I thought that was pretty honest. But this is certainly one of them. And what makes her so good in this movie? Does she just disappear into the role?
She does kind of disappear into the role, but also I was really struck by how she uses what I think is probably her lived experience in this. When she was starring in the Twilight movies, she was one of the biggest stars in the world. Mm-hmm. She was hounded by the paparazzi. She couldn't make a move. She was dating Robert Pattinson at that time. And, you know, every time they left the house, there were people with cameras hiding in trees. I remember being in New York City interviewing Robert Pattinson at the Waldorf Astoria, and we were sitting in a room doing the interview, and we could hear like a ruckus outside, and we're 10 or 11 stories up, and we look out the window, and I bet you there's 3,000 people down there going, "Robert, Robert," chanting his name over and over again. And I would imagine that Kristen Stewart's life was very similar to that at the same time. And I think that gave her a certain insight that a lot of other people may not have had into what the dealings with the press were like. There's a great scene after a church service that she goes to with the royal family, and she stands outside and the paparazzi is just everywhere. It's just a sea of flashing lights and flash bulbs and things. And the look, the camera stays on her face, and the look of being uncomfortable, the look of "please get me out of here" on her face is so real that it had to come from a real place.
Wow. Richard Krause, Booze and Reviews, as always, where can we find your brilliance online, sir?
Go to www.richardkrause.ca and listen to the radio show this weekend. There's a really cool feature-length interview with Chris Hadfield, first Canadian in space, and also author of a new book called The Apollo Murders.
Watch really our... hate you for all the great interviews you get. I really despise you.
I love you, Richard. Have a great weekend, pal.
Talk to you soon. Bye, guys.